This is the Science Behind the Art, where we discuss the insights of the cosmetic industry through a different lens, uniting scientists and artists. We are the New York Society of Cosmetic Chemists. I'm Maria.
I'm Regina.
And I'm Leah. Join us as we embrace beauty and dive behind the scenes of the cosmetic industry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome or welcome back to the NYSCC podcast, The Science Behind the Art. My name is Leah, and today we will be discussing K-beauty or Korean beauty. Allow me to introduce Yana Melnikova. Yana started her career in the cosmetic industry as an intern at Chanel 6 years ago. Today, she works in the innovation and research division of Chanel, where she is responsible for blue sky projects across multiple categories in the makeup and care axes, as well as close collaboration with the global marketing team, studio, and development labs. Yana's current role allows her to dream up of innovative concepts and bring them to life, which combines with her passion for science and creativity. Prior to rejoining Chanel, Yana worked at Coty, Inc., as a scientist in the lipstick development lab, and then in pre-development for the CoverGirl brand. That's so nice. Currently, Yana is living in Seoul, where she joined the Korean Research and Innovation Lab for a one-year international assignment at Chanel in South Korea. Yana stays actively engaged in the industry. She had her first experience putting an educational event for the NYSCC when she was a part of the event committee for the hashtag Beyond the Brief event in 2017. In 2020, she chaired a color event titled The World of Color, which I went to. So beautiful.
Thank you.
In 2020, she was also the chair of the mentorship program for the NYSCC. Yana graduated from George Washington University with degrees in biology and English literature. She also holds a certificate in beauty industry essentials from FIT, as well as portrait painting from New York Academy of Art, which has rounded her experience and gave her a fresh perspective of the industry and a concept of beauty. So welcome, Yana. We are so excited to have you.
Oh, thank you, Leah, for inviting me, and thank you for being accommodating with the time difference.
That is no problem. And also a disclaimer to our audience, though our speakers are gracious to come to speak with us, these are their own personal opinions and they are not representative of where they work. We are definitely really glad, especially given the time difference, that you are able to have this chat with us about K-beauty, which is definitely a hot topic in, I would say, around the world, honestly. But I guess say, just to get started with our first question, we always ask, tell us a little bit about yourself and we'll just start from there.
Sure. Well, my name is Yana Melnikova, like you said, and this year I am working in Chanel Korea in research and innovation as an innovation project chemist, and I'm living in Seoul. And actually, I'm only about, 3 hours away by plane where I'm originally from, which is Kazakhstan. I'm originally from Almaty, Kazakhstan, and I lived there until I was about 13 before we moved to England, where I grew up. And then finally, I moved to US to attend George Washington University in DC. So growing up, I moved to a lot of different countries and to different cultures, which I guess prepared me in some ways for my mission here today. But I think that moving from Kazakhstan to England was probably the toughest transition I've ever had because of the language and culture barrier. So I think that led me to be naturally more drawn to math and sciences, since it was so much easier to understand. But growing up, I also enjoyed painting and creative side as well. And my dad always told me, which I think is an advice for everyone, is to never use your disadvantage as an excuse not to do well or not to excel. So it led me to study a lot and to do well. That when I attended my university, I pursued both tracks, biology and English literature. So yes, and I think that also prepared me and led me to pursue my career in cosmetic science, which is such a perfect combination of science and beauty and creativity.
It's so ironic because we are the science behind the art. This is the science and also the art, just saying.
Yes, it goes well with your slogan.
Exactly. So this is like a perfect segue into our next question. So it may be obvious to some that the name K-Beauty stands for Korean beauty, but in your opinion, what is the difference between K-beauty and American beauty?
Sure, yes. So first, I want to say that, you know, before we were recording, we were saying a little bit that there might be some assumptions and the world was sort of taken over by the K-wave, you know, the Korean drama, K-pop, K-beauty, of course.
I gotta love my K-dramas, though. Like, not gonna lie. I'm watching K-dramas left and right because they're over an hour. So I have lots of them.
They're very long. And what I love about them is that they don't spare anyone. You know, like anyone in Korean movies can be hurt or something happened to them. They're not, you know, like Americans that are so afraid to touch or hurt someone. It's like they go right for the emotion. It's like that, yes, up and down. But so I think, like everyone else, I also had my preconceived notions of what K-beauty is and what it means. And you know, when I first arrived here in January, I had to do a 2-week quarantine, which is mandated by the government. So we arrived here in January and we were placed in a 2-week quarantine. So it also gave me some time to acclimate and also to introduce myself and meet more of my current team that I work with, and also to do some K-beauty research. And finally, when we were released and I arrived to the apartment and we were walking around the neighborhood where the apartment is, and there is the store called Olive Young. And if you don't know what Olive Young is, it's sort of like Ulta in US because it carries products that are anywhere from affordable to mid-price ranged. So it was the first thing I did after the quarantine is go to Olive Young. And it was just such a magical experience because when I came, the first thing I see is just shelves of sheet masks, and there's so many different colors and different sections for cosmetics. I think what's so interesting is Koreans love interesting and innovative packaging, interesting textures, interesting textures and results. So I think the first thing is that to me is the big difference between K-beauty and American beauty is, of course, the aesthetic difference. And aesthetic is with the colors that are presented to the consumer, but also, of course, with how the consumer wears her or his makeup. Of course, starting with the complexion, the big difference is that it's a porcelain complexion with absolutely no flaws, like no freckles, no dark circles, just a very perfect, clean canvas, no blemishes. And that can also mean that the finish normally is like dewy or glowy, which I think is a very famous Korean trend. It's not dead matte, like, for example, we have a lot in US. And I think that in terms of blush colors, for example, it's very peach, rosy toned, very nude tones. So very like romantic, ethereal colors. Eyeshadows also are not very vibrant and bold. You know, there is nothing like emerald green or, I don't know, like peacock blue. And not like in US. It's also very soft toned, a lot of beige, a lot of soft taupes, browns. But the finishes can be a little bit different from US because sometimes Koreans love to have glitter. I'm wearing glitter eyeshadow today also just to for the podcast. Yes, so a lot of shimmer, a lot of glitter for the eyeshadow. So I think that's the big difference is the way that the makeup is worn, the way that it's applied. And the lip colors actually, on the other hand, can be very bold, a lot of bright pinks, bright oranges, bright reds, not a lot of earthy tones. So it's almost like they only formulate with organic pigments. So everything is super vibrant and very clean colors. Lipstick can be from what I have seen and I find on the market is in many different textures and finishes. So it can be shiny, semi-matte velvet, but even the velvet in Korea is not American velvet, which means that there's still a little bit of a satin finish. The formula still tends to be comfortable. So I think that they do definitely prioritize long wear, but I think it's still not compromised by how the consumer feels or experiences the product. Because I think sometimes in US, long wear can come with a compromise of, you know, drying lips, if it's a very long wearing lipstick and so on. So I think another point of difference is, I suppose, the formula itself or the consumer. Maybe let's start with the consumer expectation, because I think it goes hand in hand. The formula itself, I find that US actually is leading more in the category of natural, or the natural landscape cosmetics is much bigger and maybe more established in US than in Korea. I think what I see in Korea is a lot of formulations that I still heavily rely on silicones, which give the best performance as of now. So actually, when you see a certain brand advertising a product, or when they put forward a certain claim, they rely a lot on how this claim was tested. So if they will say, for example, it's a long wear and breathable foundation, one of the ways that I see Koreans to be very creative in how they communicate to the consumer a certain claim is they would use different techniques. And one of the ones, as an example, is when they claim to have breathable foundation, they would put a layer of the foundation on the mesh component. And then, yeah, and then they would put it on under the snow globe, you know, those snow globes that you shake. Mm-hmm. Yes. So they would put this layer of mesh with the foundation on top, and then they would put air through it to show that their breathable foundation can, you will see like little flakes of snow, or, you know, fake snow in the globe. And so they're very, very clever with how they communicate, how the claim can be tested, or how it can be perceived by the consumer. So I think in this way, Korean consumer is very educated, or she wants or he wants to have something that will be efficacious or has shown to have some sort of performance, which sometimes means foregoing natural and relying more on synthetic materials that have a proven track of having, you know, a solid performance.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. However, I do see some natural claims popping up here and there in the Korean market. But normally it would say that just for one single ingredient, not for the entire formula. But I would say that the eco-consciousness of the consumer is also prevalent in Korea. So I think that now maybe it's no longer a demand in US, it's becoming more of a solid standard that the brands will be committed to, you know, CSR or to clean beauty, whatever that definition is. But in Korea now, I think eco-conscious is becoming also a very popular trend. But I think it's more to do, from what I have seen, from the packaging side. So either it comes from recycled packaging, or the packaging can be recycled. There is a store in Seoul by Innisfree. You know, one
of love that store. Yeah. They have one in New Jersey at like the mall there too, but that's the only one that I've ever been to.
Yes, there are so many. Another thing too that I wanted to mention is Olive Young, Innisfree, and many, many other cosmetic shops here, especially Olive Young, is like on every corner of Seoul. So it's like Starbucks in US, where you can't walk, you know, a block without seeing one. It's the same here. There is some rise in the demand of the consumer to have more commitment to be eco-friendly as well. And then I guess another point of difference. So we just covered aesthetic formula. Mm-hmm. And I think another one is also how you experience the product itself. So first, Of course, it is the communicating to the consumer how the product works, which can be done in creative ways, I just mentioned. But also the sensoriality itself is quite different. For example, maybe it's mostly in skincare that I think Koreans love watery, fresh gel textures. When I first arrived, I was also really into it. I'm like, this is so fresh and so beautiful, has such a nice glide and slip. It's not a heavy cream texture. But after some times, I started to miss like a very American, you know, like heavy whipped cream type of textures and butters. So I think that there are some oils on the market. Oil cleanser, absolutely. It's almost mandatory in your routine. But oils and serums, I think, for example, is very American, but it's more water-based, light, fresh in Korea. I think maybe it also has to do with the climates of the country too, since it's a very humid climate. It's good to have a watery-based products that are light, but they can still be a little bit sticky, mm-hmm. Which I think sometimes we don't like in US, but sticky sometimes feels like moisturizing or hydrating for the Korean consumer. And hydration is big must in your product. Now that I covered some of the differences, I also want to point out that there are some similarities too. So one is the CSR commitment from brands. And I think the second is the knowledgeable consumer. I think the consumer is very knowledgeable in US and in Korea. But I think sometimes in different ways. For example, I think American consumers like to talk about ingredients that are in their formulas. Mm-hmm. But I think in Korea, it's more about efficacy and performance. And so you cannot just claim this product does this. You have to convince her or him to believe that. And another one I think is also the big similarity is the celebration of heritage. But it's also approached in a little bit of a different way. So I think in US, the celebration of heritage comes from celebrating our big diversity because we're not a homogenous society. So it's celebrating of different skin types, skin tones, and so on. And really celebrating our population and our strength in how heterogeneous or diverse we are.
Right.
In Korea, I think the celebration of heritage comes more from a certain ingredients that they're being integrated into the formula. Like, you know, the most obvious one is, for example, ginseng. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of brands that use ginseng as an active ingredient, or they will even use water from Jeju Island, which is a volcanic island right off of the mainland. So they will say this product is made with Jeju water. And they also like to even include fermented products, you know, kimchi. Mm-hmm. Is a fermented food product. So I think they like to include some fermented process in their formulas of ingredients as well. So it's celebration of heritage more from ingredient or process standpoint than in US, which is more about social acceptance and living together, I guess.
And that was
long.
No, but that was really enlightening because I had my own preconceptions about Korea and just K-beauty, because I always was under the assumption that when it came to sustainability, that Korea was actually, I guess, pioneering that, I guess, movement. And that was actually one of the other questions that a viewer asked was, when it comes to Korea and sustainability, does Korea have a larger sustainability presence in their cosmetics versus America? But based on what you said, it's very, not obvious, but it's evident that they do have a presence, but more on the packaging side versus the ingredient side, because they don't want to forego the performance of their products.
Yeah, I think totally it's more prevalent in the packaging side or recycling of packaging components. But I think sustainability is also tied to the origin of your natural ingredients, right? So mm-hmm. you don't want deforestation of certain parts just to have an oil or butter or things like that. But I think it doesn't mean that they forgo sustainability. Maybe it just means that since the formulation is more synthetically derived.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good point, because there's also this pre-consumption that K-beauty, just products overall, are considered natural, they're clean, they're better for the environment. I've heard a lot of preconceived notions, and that's actually one of the other questions is, actually, it's actually a combined question. When it comes to K-beauty, are they affected by the clean beauty trend, the natural movement, or just Americanized trends? Are they being influenced, and has that affected how they're marketing their products and how they're trying to sell their products in the American market?
So I think, in my opinion, I think that sometimes the clean natural in US goes so much hand in hand with like a little bit of fear mongering, mm-hmm. you know?
I agree wholeheartedly. I still don't understand what it means to be clean.
Everyone has a different definition. And I think that sometimes there is a lot of hype about it in US. And I think it's also a way for some brands to capitalize on this, but mm-hmm. without having a lot of very kind of like clear definition of what that actually means.
Right.
And I think it's very easy to get people riled up and excited about certain things without truly understanding what it means.
Especially here in America. Oh my gosh.
Yes, exactly. So I think that it certainly is a big draw in the American market to say that your brand or your cosmetics is clean or naturally derived.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times that's a big sell for the American consumer. I do think that Korean consumer, of course, wants to make sure that they're buying product that is not bad for the environment. But I think that there is not so much of this, I don't know how to say it, not outrage, but maybe emotional drive is okay. Not as strong in Korea as it is in the US. I think that sometimes American consumer is emotionally driven by the fact that the brand is selling or marketing clean or natural.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that because it's tied so much in the American market, however, I do see that natural is becoming quite popular in the Korean market as well. And for sure, sustainability, like eco-sustainable packaging, is also important in Korea as well. But it's not tied to this like emotional factor. It's not that they will or that they would ban or boycott a brand because it uses, I don't know, phenoxyethanol or something like that.
It's quite ironic because that's one of the, I guess, bad quote unquote ingredients along with ether sulfates, along with silicones. If it contains any of like these components that they're classified as, for lack of better words, dirty, then it's not considered clean for a cosmetic sake.
Yes. But I also have to say, you know, I'm by no means an expert, you know, on what is the definition of clean, because I think different organizations and different companies or brands will have different definitions. And mm-hmm. there are even like organizations that can give you a certificate, you know, that to certify that this is clean. But I don't think it's very regulated unless it's USDA or something like that. So
USDA is more for the natural,
organic,
not for clean beauty.
Yes.
That's like this own marketing ploy, in my opinion, to get consumers to just purchase it. Now on to our next question. This was actually a really interesting one that somebody asked. Was the emergence of J-beauty or Japanese beauty a formidable competitor to K-beauty?
In my opinion, I think J-beauty was more of a starting trend in terms of Asian cosmetics. I think that maybe from what I remember is that it started with J-Beauty, then it became K-Beauty, then J-Beauty came back a little bit in popularity. And I think now or in the future, it will be about C-Beauty, you know, China. So
interesting. I wasn't expecting China to come into the game. Okay.
I think that's what makes it so nice to live in the world now is our access to different markets at a touch of our smartphone, because, you know, we can easily check Instagram or YouTube videos and easily understand, you know, what the product is or what the aesthetic is. Mm-hmm. Also, for us, specifically in the cosmetic industry, we have access to a lot of educational webinars that kind of explain what things are and why they're popular. So I think that it's very common for different markets to gain and rise in popularity, maybe slow down, come back again, because I have seen my experience with Asian beauty was first with Japanese and then Korean. And then I know J-Beauty came back in popularity, like I said, but because I think there are different routines and different standards and different ways to apply makeup in all of these countries. Mm-hmm. And I think, or all of these markets rather. So I think that anything that will be unique or interesting or somehow efficacious will gain popularity. And then we just, as consumers, you know, we can also market on that too. But the reason I was hesitant to answer this question is because, and maybe, I don't know if it's okay to say or not, but you know, because there is a lot of tension between Korea and Japan historically.
Yep.
Yes. And I think last year there was some movement to reduce the number of Japanese imported cosmetics to Korea. So I don't, when I go out to the stores, I see a lot of K-beauty products.
Right.
There are some Japanese products, but they're mostly on the higher end. You know, it is your Shiseido, RMK,
Tatcha,
Paula, Shu Uemura, like you see those in department stores. And maybe if you very popular, like Kate Cosmetics, which is more affordable and they make great mascaras, and Handmake also, which is like very cute, affordable brand that you can buy at Olive Young. But in general, I do think that even then, J and K Beauty are quite different in their own ways as well.
And thank you for that, because there is that historical aspect that a lot of people seem to forget. It's not just about the marketability, because they're both two different entities. They both sell cosmetics to a certain demographic of people, but also that historical aspect of the tensions and just all that. That also will play a factor in, well, in this case, J-Beauty being sold in Korea, not really more so in America. We seem to just be like, yeah, you can come in. We just pay our imports. So,
yeah. Like, well, so the reason that particular regulation came about, I think it was from previous regulations that Japan mandated and Korea. So it was like a lot of back and forth. So they were both kind of
playing, so
yes, mm-hmm. with each other. So, but that's beyond my
knowledge. And that's okay, because I mean, cosmetics is not just strictly just makeup, mascara.
It's also economy. Like, yes,
like there's a whole story as to why we have created these products and why there are certain trends and there aren't. So it's definitely great to have this background for not just for me, because I'm sitting here learning this, but also for our viewers who may not have known about that aspect of J-Beauty and K-Beauty. So definitely thank you for that. But you did mention like the future of K-Beauty, and that was actually one of my questions actually, is do you see the trend of K-beauty in America continuing in the future? Because you mentioned like J-beauty came in, then K-beauty, then J-beauty kind of died for a bit, then J-beauty is now getting a little bit of traction. But I've personally seen that both categories, they're really not getting a lot of highlights anymore. People aren't really quick to go and buy a SK-II, essence bottle anymore. One, the economy, and two, I mean, I guess it just not fully, but it just kind of lost its popularity, like its footing. So I was curious to know, do you see K-beauty making a bounce back in the near future?
Well, I think that a lot of the products that are sold in the Korean market perform well because they have efficacy and proven efficacy too. But I think that with the rise in demand, for example, for naturality, maybe either we understand what is an American consumer, what that means, and what the compromise on that will be, and understand that sometimes performance is not dependent on, I don't know, naturality. It can be. Mm-hmm. I think right now we have a lot of natural ingredients that are coming up and have very good performance promise. Mm-hmm. But I think that, yes, maybe it's not so that standard and demand from the American consumer, and the difference in the formulation itself in the Korean market, they're not so congruent with, you know, with each other. Mm-hmm. So I think that it will maybe continue to be popular, but we also in the US, but we also must understand that it will not always be 100% natural. Maybe some products or some brands, but not like in the US, I think.
Gotcha. And that was really nicely put, because I have began to notice, and I mean, I think I have always had that feeling in the back of my head that when it comes to these movements, at least here in America for clean beauty and natural, we want 100% naturally derived ingredients. Sometimes I want to, I guess, shake the person who's saying it, like, if you want it, like, we can give it to you, but you're gonna sacrifice the quality, the shelf life, because you want a naturally derived, like, fully 100% naturally derived product.
Yeah, I think I'm grateful that we have very clever suppliers with, you know, nice raw materials and technologies. So I think that maybe in the future it will be more easily achieved, but we still have some gaps in technologies, though it's becoming better in terms of, you know, expectation and performance. But I think that there are still some things that are not quite as good, but I think we will get there maybe in the future.
You really make me want to live in Korea, like, so bad. So bad. And I say this because not just the environment, the culture, the food, it's just the atmosphere, the way that consumers are knowledgeable, the raw material suppliers, that's a big one, that they're actually transparent.
Mm.
That is amazing. This was one of my questions to you is, so many of us now should know that you're currently stationed in Korea working with their Chanel location. And one of my questions to you was just in terms of what recommendations do you have for chemists or somebody who's interested in cosmetics who wants to have a career in it, but also wants to, let's say, start in a foreign country or work in a foreign country for a year. Could you talk to us about just your experience so far in terms of the language barrier, daily work life, any of that sort?
So the advice for people who are entering the cosmetic industry, I will borrow from what my friend Alice always said. She's also in the industry, but she said that when she was entering the industry, or when she started her professional life, her dad said three things, which is never say no, always ask questions, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. never count your hours.
Interesting.
Yes. I would suggest that, just because, you know, when you're starting out, you want to say yes to everything, because it gives you an opportunity to learn many different things. And it also gives an opportunity to learn maybe what you might not enjoy and things that you do enjoy. So it's a very good opportunity for growth. And when you ask questions, you also gain knowledge, but you also gain investment of others in you. let's say if I was asking you many questions and you were answering, you feel invested in my growth. So that's also a very good way to grow in knowledge, but also in relationships too. And never count your hours because, well, I think that I feel very lucky personally because this doesn't feel like a job because I'm always very happy to do what I enjoy. So I think that you want to do as much as you can. I mean, of course, it's important to have a balance and to have activities and hobbies outside of your work. And I think that another thing on top of those three pieces of advice is to going back to what, you know, my dad said also, don't use a disadvantage as an excuse. Mm-hmm. Another thing I would also say is to have a very good mentor is very important because, you know, my American manager, boss, leader, rather, is Eileen, who I met very randomly at one of the NYCC events, actually. So attend NYCC events, attend industry events. It's important. But I'm very grateful to have met her because she has been very instrumental to my growth professionally and personally because she is just such a great mentor to me. And I think it's very important to have somebody in your life who understands you and who you can rely on for guidance and who can direct you, but also challenge you to grow professionally and personally. And it's important to understand what makes somebody a very good manager or a good leader. And if it's not easy for somebody to find that in their life, in their work, also a little plug, I guess, for the mentorship program. I think it's a good opportunity to reach out to them. Right now, it's Mary and Ava who are leading this program, but it's a good way to connect and network with people.
Necessary plug, go to the nyscc.org to find a mentor because they're so important. They're so needed for just growth, for just experience, life knowledge.
Right. And in terms of going to a different country, well, the first thing is, of course, if you want to have this kind of international experience, then you want to work for a brand that has locations in different markets. And I think also with my company, we're a very fluid organization. And even though we have lab centers in different regions and markets of the world, we still tend to work very closely together. So sometimes, you know, it means waking up really early or staying up late to catch on each other's time zones. But in the end, you get to know people and you work well with each other. So it's a good opportunity to be interested and to say, I want to exchange knowledge with you and also to be very transparent with your manager that this is something that you are interested in doing. Don't be afraid to say what makes you happy or what makes you excited. But of course, having an opportunity like that is so tremendous for your growth as a professional, but also personally. But as I said, it comes with some challenges too, because you are immersed in a completely different culture, different language. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, in our lab in Korea, everybody speaks English. So that's not, you know, an issue. But yeah, it's just when that opportunity comes to you is to be open that it will be very exciting, but it will also be a little bit challenging too, and be open to this challenge. Not to be afraid when things get difficult and maybe you get homesick, because that's normal. Like, be easy on yourself a little bit too. But also the lessons that you learn and the friendships that you forge with your colleagues or with people outside of work is also very invaluable too. Yeah.
You really made me want to just go abroad, but I can't.
Soon. I hope soon it's possible.
I know. But that actually is a great segue into our next question. So it's also, I do want to just point out, like, your experiences at your current company and being stationed in Korea. They sound, well, for one, I'm very jelly. Like, it's such a invaluable experience. Like, you can't trade that for anything. So I'm a huge advocate. If you can study abroad, whether it's for school or for work, that's just a wonderful experience that everybody should take advantage of if you can. But since you are currently on assignment in Korea, what has been your most interesting project so far, if you could disclose, with your current job?
Oh, no. Nice one. No, I'm sorry. I cannot say because also I work in innovation. So we work on projects that go to development. So that means that we work on projects that sometimes will be out in a few years on the market. But even if you work in development, it's very difficult to talk about exactly what you're working on. Right. But I guess what I will say is just that I love all of the projects that I have. Mm-hmm. They're all different and challenging for their own purposes. And also, it's not like it takes the entire company or entire R&D center to bring something to life. And it's very nice to work with people who are like-minded and who want to do well for the product and who get excited about cosmetics. It doesn't really answer your question, but...
No, it basically does. I mean, that's the question that I was expecting. Because you're working on that side, you're not really going to give me an answer because you don't want to disclose company secrets. Yeah. So good. You're not supposed to answer.
But I guess what is so interesting about this assignment is the fact that I get to work with people and coworkers I really enjoy working with, who are very knowledgeable and who are very generous with sharing their knowledge and who always want to help you and who just also acknowledge and value your work as well. And to work, yes, with a very nice company, with nice people who support each other and want to do well, because it's not one person, it's many, many people.
Exactly. Yeah. Beautifully answered. I don't care what you said. That was beautifully answered.
Thank you. It was.
So we have just actually two questions left. This one, which I gotta ask it because it has to deal with Korea. If you know, feel free to say it. If you don't, what fragrances do Korean celebrities use?
I don't know. I don't know, but I have to say, oh, that's an interesting question. Maybe I should look into it. I know that prestigious brands are very popular in Korea. So it is, you know, your Chanel's, your Dior's, it's very popular here. However, it just reminds me of also something that this is not celebrity at all, but do you remember a few years ago, there was a very, very popular, now the name escapes me, but everyone wore this fragrance in New York. It's like, it was like, this fragrance was so synonymous with New York City. I forget what it was. Can I just...
with New York.
Lalabo or...
was it Le Labo Santal? Yes. That was the one that symbolized New York. I don't know why I was thinking like Victor and Rolf. I don't know why that was on my mind. Like Victor and Rolf.
I just remember it was like maybe in 2016 or 15 or 17, maybe 16, 17. Like you could not turn a corner without smelling somebody wearing Le Labo Santal. And it's funny because it's not exactly Le Labo Santal, but I smell it a lot here.
Interesting.
Yes, like some kind of variation of it, just on people who are in a restaurant, or I think it's a very popular scent. Also, Jo Malone is popular.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Was not picturing that, but okay.
Yes. I think, at least in my experience, there is a lot of niche brands in US. Mm-hmm. And because everybody wants to smell very unique and differently. But I don't see a lot of these types of shops in Korea. However, I do see some shops that specialize in mixing notes for you.
Which, that is nice and unique.
Yes, I think that is more easily accessible than in US. But I mean, of course, it's a challenge to do that during COVID, because how can you smell?
Right. Yeah.
So that's, yes, I suppose that mostly big brands, the French or US brands, and then also the derivative of La Labo Santal.
That's good to know. So I hope to the viewer that asked that question, I hope we answered it to the best of our ability.
It's not exactly La Labo Santal, but it just reminds me, it's like brings me back to New York. So maybe I should buy it every time I get homesick.
You should just test it out.
And every time I get, yes, and every time I want to feel like I'm in New York.
Exactly. That'll be perfect.
Yeah.
And so this is my final question. And I always ask my guests this. It is, if you were a cosmetic, what would it be and why? I know, it's a hard one.
No, I love, because I was asking my fiance, my husband, you know, like what about the podcast? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, you should introduce first to say that I'm Jana, I love cosmetics, and if I were a cosmetic, I would be this. And he's like, what's your answer? Because he's coming like very excited with a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. So maybe he prepped me for this question.
Good job, hubby.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know, I guess lipstick, right? Because it can be different colors. And I think that we change a lot and we grow a lot. Mm-hmm. So I suppose lipstick, it can be bright, it can be toned down. Yeah.
That's a very beautiful answer. You are the second person who has told me they would be a lipstick. And by far...
What do people normally say?
I would say it's kind of varies. Like, I've been told sunscreen, I've been told lipstick, lotion, like, but so far lipstick is the more popular category. Yeah. Now. So it's good to know.
Oh, sunscreen. I wonder who gave, maybe was it was your answer?
Yep, I chose sunscreen.
Yeah, that's a good one. But why?
So I chose sunscreen because I am a huge advocate that whenever you go outside, put on your sunscreen, regardless of if it's cloudy, regardless if it's raining, just put it on, because you gotta protect your skin. I'm a very conscious person of how my face, how my skin looks, and I have to take care of it. And the one thing that I can never leave my house without wearing is sunscreen.
Yes, it's a good one.
Thank you.
It's reliable.
It is reliable, but lipstick is too. I mean, you can wear a dark red lip to get that edgy look. And then in Korea, it's really that edgy look is not really what people are, I guess, gravitating to. So that nice, soft, lovable, I'm attracting a male type look. Yeah. Like, a lipstick is basically something that can upgrade your look to any of those categories. So lipstick is a great choice.
Ah, oh, thank you. I like how you say upgrade. Yes. But just a little caveat, sorry to say, but you know, sometimes they do wear very bright colors here for lipsticks too. So yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but it's not really along, like here in America, since we're getting closer to fall, it's more going to be like dark reds, dark browns. Some people even wear black, because I mean, Halloween.
No, it will not be
really dark colors.
Yeah, I don't see like so vampy. I don't think.
Yeah, vampy. Yeah. Vampy. That's a better term. Not really edgy, but like vampy. Like, you're getting to like the really, really like the dark, cool, neutral undertone lipsticks. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Good to know. So that is it for our podcast. Thank you so much. This was super fun. And to our viewers, if you'd like to hear more, please stay tuned for more podcasts coming to you soon.
Like what you heard?
The NYSCC is here to move cosmetic science forward. Stay tuned to our next episodes and visit nysec.org for more content.